Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Today, we have with us Stu Hynek, and we will speak with him about his latest book, Get the Meeting.
Well, I'll tell you the pattern I see, and that is everybody needs to get meetings. Everybody. And whether or not the word sales is in our titles, everybody sells. And so, I mean, you might be just pushing an initiative. You may be looking for a strategic partnership, or maybe that's what you do. Maybe that's your job function. So it's just universal. Everybody needs to get meetings at some point in their lives, and some need them more often than others. I mean, who have the word sales in their title certainly need to get a steady stream of business, but that means getting meetings. And really, if you think about it, everything that's happened in your life and in my life and everybody's lives, every good thing, everything that has moved us forward has happened as a result of connecting with someone.
Dubbed by the American Marketing Association the father of contact marketing, Stu Hynek is a Wall Street Journal cartoonist, Hall of Fame nominated marketeer, and the best-selling author of How to Get a Meeting with Anyone and Get the Meeting. Stu is also the founder of cartoonists.org, a group of WSJ and New Yorker cartoonists who donate their art to help charities raise funds. Now, on to this exciting episode with Stu Hynek.
Stu, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm really excited to have you here. You are putting out some seriously original thoughts out there, although people may think that these are more pre-digital era ideas, but I know that there's a lot of value in what you are saying because human beings have honestly not changed that much. So to start, my question is that after this hugely successful first book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, why did you need to write a second one?
Well, my publisher asked me to.
That's a good one.
By the way, thank you for having me on the show. Well, he asked me to because the first book has actually been very popular. So that first one is How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And then we sat down about 3 years ago and he said, I'd like you to do a follow-up. And what would you do if it was a follow-up to the book? I mean, is there anything new happening? And I said, well, yeah. I mean, first of all, when the first book came out, one of the things that happened right away was that people were reaching out. They were saying, I love your book. And I wish we had talked before you had finished your book because I have a way of breaking through and it's really pretty dramatic in terms of the response that it generates. Huh, okay. And so there were more and more stories. Well, there were stories of new techniques. Then there were stories that were coming in from people who used some of what they read in the first book and said, you know, I put it to use and I just wanted to tell you about it. It's changed my life. And so, okay, great. And then another thing that I kept hearing was, gee, you know, I really enjoyed the book, but I wish I could have seen what the campaigns actually looked like.
Right.
So, you know, I would have loved to have seen seen pictures of it. What is it they're actually sending out? Hmm. When Dan Waldschmidt sends a sword, what does that look like? You know, when you send a cartoon, what does that look like? Hmm. And so the first thing we thought was, well, then let's put together a collection of case studies with photography. Let's start there. And we did. And then as I went along, I realized I was discovering more and more, or cataloging more and more new ways to reach people that are you know, these are people that can change the scale of our lives and our career. Well, they change it by changing the scale of our careers or our businesses, but they change the scale of our lives. So how do we reach those people? And how else do we reach those people became one of the questions that was becoming more and more a factor in the book. And then finally, when I finished writing all of these things, I realized, well, okay, there really is a whole new model here. It's still a rather simple model, but a whole new model for contact marketing. And so that also came out of the book. That was a surprise. I didn't realize that was going to happen, but there's a whole new model, and it now includes a persistence track. Maybe you could call it a persistence/velocity track to keep the velocity of the contact and of the sale, of the sale throughout the cycle going. There's then also, of course, the outreach portion, which is what has always been there. And then there's another thing called pocket campaigns that, I don't know if it should replace business cards. I don't know if it will, but it's in the book. And so all of those things tie together into a new model. And then ultimately from there, I realized, well, my gosh, there are a number of people who are getting just extraordinary results from contact marketing. And by that, I don't mean, you know, a 1% response rate or a 0.25% response or click-through rate. I'm talking about response rates that are often hitting 100%. Actually, it's the most I've never seen any other form of marketing do this or produce metrics like this. But we are seeing more and more instances of 100% response rates. In fact, actually, the highest now that I've seen is 300%. So it's gone beyond the original audience, and the audience members are showing the contact device around, and it's causing more contact to happen than pieces were handed out. So I'll just say that ultimately we ended up with a model that I think actually allows us to reset our response or the baseline for our response rates to contact marketing campaigns to 100%, which is just sort of heresy.
Totally. So the quick question, although I thought I'll sort of bring that up later into the discussion, what kind of products are getting this kind of response? Is it, do you see it sort of a certain type, or is it like all over the place?
When you say it's all over the place, although there are certain kinds of executives that are harder, we find are harder to reach. I mean, CIOs and CISOs they're really pretty, they just don't seem to want to contact anybody.
That's true.
But there are ways around that. Hmm. But it's being used in all sorts of industries and markets.
And what kind of services are using this? Are there a kind of services or products, like I want to do a campaign, is there a definition to who I am, that these are more like product guys, these are more service guys, these are more, consultants? Do you see any pattern there?
Well, I'll tell you the pattern I see, and that is everybody needs to get meetings.
Yes.
Everybody. And whether or not the word sales is in our titles, everybody sells.
True.
So, I mean, you might be just pushing an initiative.
Yes.
And you need to move it forward. Or you may be looking for a strategic partnership, or maybe that's what you do. Maybe that's your job function. Mm-hmm. So you're not actually trying to sell anything, but you are. Well, I guess you're trying to sell the company and the value of doing business together or partnering together, or you maybe even be looking for a mentor or, you know, even a sponsor, or I guess that's probably sales, but a job, could be part of a job search even.
Right. Got it.
So it's just universal. Hmm. Everybody needs to get, or it seems like everybody needs to get meetings at some point in their lives, and some need them more often than more than others. I mean, people who sell for, I mean, who have the word sales in their title certainly need to get a steady stream of business, I mean, of business, but that means getting meetings. And really, if you think about it, everything that's happened in your life and in my life and everybody's lives, every good thing, everything that has moved us forward has happened as a result of connecting with someone.
Yes, Absolutely, absolutely. I'll just go back a bit from the book. I have a question which comes up in my mind. I know you are, as a professional, you are a cartoonist.
That's one of the things, yeah. I have an odd background. I am one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists.
Yes. How did you sort of become this marketing guru?
Well, first of all, cartoons are incredibly powerful marketing devices.
Absolutely, I agree.
They really are.
Yeah.
My background is this. I'm an author. I mean, that's why we're talking.
Yes.
But I'm also one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists. So let's just say I'm a professional cartoonist, and I'm a marketer, and in fact, a Hall of Fame nominated marketer. So the way that those things all came together was, I studied in university. That's what I studied. My degree is in marketing.
Oh, so this was something you doodled when you were young, and it sort of became something you wanted to do regularly? Was that how it, this part evolved?
Well, sure. Yeah. I've always thought marketing was pretty fascinating. Actually, there are a lot of things that are fascinating, but certainly I thought marketing was fascinating and something I wanted to invest my future in for my career. Mm-hmm. And, but at the same time, I loved drawing cartoons and I loved cartoons and loved creating them. I loved I was very aware of who the great cartoonists were. They were kind of my heroes. And as my education and career started to blossom, then so did my desire to also be a professional cartoonist. I didn't want to just draw them. I wanted to get to the level that publications would run them. Would buy them and run them, or that they could be used in marketing and advertising campaigns. So they all actually, I know it sounds like a really strange combination, but they all really fit together well. I mean, there's also the aspect of cartoons is that readership surveys have been run by magazines and newspapers since they've been around, and what they were finding was that cartoons are almost always the best read and remembered part of any publication they're in. And in fact, in newspapers, when they were still around and people were reading them, the cartoons within the newspapers were getting more readership and higher memory scores, I suppose, than the front page. They were getting better read than the front page. Here's this device that people love to read. I'm going to use a pun here. I was going to say no pun intended, but it's there. They're drawn to them, you know? There's that. And then you think about the nature of humor. When you think about humor, you sort of break it down. It's really about, or at least I believe, it's about truth being revealed in a twist.
Yes.
Which is why whenever we find something funny, we're usually laughing and then we're saying, oh my God, that's so true. It is like that. I've been through something like that, or I know someone like that.
Yeah.
But it's always, you always hear those words, oh my God, that's so true.
Yes, yes.
Because it is true.
That's a fascinating story, yes.
Yeah, and it's a great way to deliver not only truth, but a central point of agreement, which, you know, so here's this device that gets everybody's attention and then it delivers immediately. I mean, they're not. People aren't even aware of it. They laugh. They've already gotten the point.
Yeah.
It delivers this point of agreement that makes it very easy to be very persuasive on the back end of seeing that or including that.
Totally. I mean, we are increasingly sort of staying in a world where our guards are up always. Now, with all these privacy issues going around, guards are up a lot more. And humor and cartoons could be a pretty easy way to break through that. I mean, I can see that. I mean, where you are coming from.
Yeah, and by the way, I just want to make sure I make this point that I don't mean to say that that's what contact marketing is about. It's cartooning. That's my contact patch with it. But that's not the entirety of contact marketing.
No. We are still on you. How did you do both? And so that's I think authors. I mean, our readers will be and listeners will be very discerning about this, I'm sure. Thanks for making that point, though. So back to the book. You have a bunch of new ideas you have outlined here. So let's start with the new tech. Because in sales and marketing, in fact, I don't know if you follow Scott Binker, he just made some estimate that MarTech is today worth $122 billion or something like that. So, which means there is a lot of MarTech out there.
Yes, there is a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, here's the thing. To answer the question about new technology or new technologies being used in contact marketing, I have to go back to very old technology. You know, the oldest story I've found so far, and I'm sure this isn't the oldest one out there, of someone using contact marketing actually is, it goes back to Leonardo da Vinci.
Wow.
Apparently the a member of the de' Medici family who were patrons of the artists of the Renaissance. But one of the members of the de' Medici family wanted to meet the Count of Milan. And so he commissioned Leonardo to create something that he could send to the Count that would open the door.
Whoa.
And so you can actually find it on Google. Leonardo produced this lute. I think it's a lute or a lyre. I don't know. It's a musical instrument, a stringed musical instrument made out of the skull of a horse. So it's a fascinating, kind of macabre thing, but it's fascinating as well. Now, as a result of sending that to the Count, Leonardo and the Count became lifelong friends from that point on. Actually, I don't know if we got the de' Medici person, I mean, family member through, but that happened. So, the thing is, this has been a constant throughout our civilized time on Earth, that we need to connect with others and we need to form alliances or something. We need to get something happening with others, and some are very important and or very busy, and so they're not terribly open to being contacted, and so that's just been happening for a very long time. So now we look to today and really to tomorrow. I guess really it is today. I mean, we have technologies that are emerging: virtual reality and augmented reality and AI. Man, AI is everywhere. I don't know that anyone would even ask now, well, where is AI showing up? Because it's everywhere. It's in CRM programs. It's a layer within Salesforce. It's used to identify buying signals out in the marketplace. Really, really useful things, or to do profile scrapes. All of those are really useful. When you think about the process of meeting someone, the first thing you need to figure out is, well, who do I need to meet? The next thing is, well, what am I going to do to meet them? And then I guess the third step would be then implementing it and making it happen. So that first step of figuring out, well, who do I need to meet? Well, wow, you know, if you have AI out there searching for buying signals, and you know, it's picking up signals from internet searches and from posts on social media and so forth. Well, that's extraordinary, because what's been discovered is that that people, of course, go through certain behaviors before they buy something, and those can be picked up. We wouldn't be able to pick them up without AI, but that's changing the world, isn't it? So, you know, we're finding trigger events hidden trigger events much more easily now, because AI is digging those things up. And there's a really fascinating program called, it's either called AIMEE, or the host company is X.AI. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of AIMEE at all?
Yeah, that's one of their bots, yes.
Yeah, so, and it sets up appointments for you?
Yes.
And it's indiscernible. You can't tell that it's not a human being doing it.
Yeah.
So that, and in fact, it's so human, it's so impressive that I end up finding, I find myself referring to it as her instead of it.
Exactly.
You know, it's because it becomes a person. It's really, yes. It's so realistic. It's so well done.
Yes, I agree. Yes.
But I was going to say, then there are all sorts of other interesting uses, or let's say predicted uses, of let's say, virtual reality would be a good one. One of the things that I put in the book was, it's forward looking as well, but what if we could drop a pair of VR goggles in a nice box, wooden box, and it's and engraved in the box, it says, "Meet me on the beach in Tahiti." So you open up the box, put on the goggles. I mean, there'd probably be simple directions. Turn the goggles on, put them on. And then suddenly you're on the beach in Tahiti. That's pretty cool. Or you can, the wonderful thing about VR is that you can give someone any experience. We could, it could be meeting, let's meet on the moon, or let's go wingsuiting off a cliff. And then when we get down, let's talk a little bit about what I want to talk about. But you can hand people experiences that are extraordinary in those VR goggles. And you know, another one that really, I mean, some of what's in the new book is forward thinking, and I thought, okay, you know, look, the VR is out there. How can we put this to use? And so I formulated postulated a few thoughts there. But I also did that with augmented reality. And one of the things that really impressed me was, I don't know if you drink wine, and if you do, if you know the brand 19 Crimes.
Okay, no, I don't drink wine, but I heard of the brand, yes.
Yeah, well, so 19 Crimes is it's a brand of wine, and you know, wines, the bottles of wine, they've got a tough life, don't they? Huh. I mean, you go into the wine section in the store, and there's lots of bottles of wine, and they've got labels on them, and these labels are all doing their best.
Yeah.
Well, let's say they're not really alive, but you know, they're intended to get your attention and intrigue you enough to pick up that bottle versus all the others.
Yes.
Well, 19 Crimes took this much further. They built in an AR experience into their wine label. So if you view their wine label through an app called Living Wines, Living Wines app, if you view that label through that app on your phone, well, there are these criminals on each label is a sort of a mugshot of criminals from the 1800s who were banished to Australia. It's Australian wine.
Okay.
They were banished to Australia, and there were a list of 19 crimes that would get you banished to Australia. So these were criminals who were found guilty of those things. And if you hold your phone up to the label, that the character comes alive. There's this sepia tone character from, you know, it's a sepia tone photograph from the 1800s, but the character comes alive and starts speaking to you over the phone, telling his or her story of why she did what they did, and that's pretty amazing, and so we could be building those same things into, let's say, our business cards,
right,
or anything really. It's just it can be triggered by an image. Or maybe more crudely, it could be triggered by a QR code.
Yes,
but certainly you can impart all kinds of really wild experiences to people that dazzle them and cause them to say, "Wow, I love." I mean, that's the point of all this, is you want people to be saying, the people that you reach out to be saying, "Wow, I love the way this person thinks."
Yes,
I've got to connect.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that sort of ties into concept of, I mean, what you call pocket campaigns and some examples that you share, it sort of dovetails into that, isn't it?
It does. That's true, because one of the other places I looked at was just business cards. I'm writing about how I'm about meetings and about getting meetings. Well, some of these meetings happen by chance,
right?
And what are we doing about that? And how is contact marketing addressing that? And you know, usually what happens is, well, either we hand someone our business card and they throw it away or put it away somewhere.
Yeah.
Or we don't use cards. We say, well, why don't we trade phones and I'll put, you know, I'll type my contact details into your phone and you can type yours into mine.
Yeah.
And then you promptly forget who they are.
Yeah.
And lose. Or you say, let's connect on LinkedIn. And you do that. And you know, I think connecting on LinkedIn it's wonderful. It's an amazing tool or platform. But you know, the simple act of connecting with someone on LinkedIn is I think about as weighty in someone's life as waving to them heading the other other direction on the freeway.
I totally agree. In fact, a lot of times I ask people that you have connected and now what did you do with those connections? Most of them said, well, nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing, which means nothing happened.
Yes.
I mean, otherwise, nothing happens.
It's time for a short break. And when we come back, we will hear Stu talk about an age-old tool, your business card, and how to make that remarkable and memorable. We will be right back. You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end. As we went into the break, Stu was explaining how some visiting cards become memorable and how you can use it to get more meetings. On to Stu.
We've all received, I mean, I said we receive business cards and then throw them away, but there are some business cards that we don't do that to. And yeah. There's some that are really fascinating. And you look at them and you say, wow, I didn't realize a business card could be like this. Hmm. And so the first thing I looked at was, well, what is it that, of which cards are like that? And what makes them like that? What makes them different? Because, you know, otherwise, all of the thing is there's a strategy that everybody is following on their business cards, unless they're just getting cheap business cards.
Yeah.
But the strategy is somehow, it's kind of like an arms race. How can I make myself, how can I make me seem more impressive than somebody else through my business card? So people are using gold foil stamping or embossing or fancy paper stocks or they're having them laser engraved into metal and bamboo and carbon fiber and so on. I mean, carbon fiber. And the thing is, none of that works. People still set them aside. That's not what causes people to say, whoa, that's an amazing business card. What does, though, is when the business card is actually an engagement device.
Right.
And so if it's an engagement device, let's say it could be an invitation to play. You just play with it. But it's fascinating, sort of endlessly fascinating. Or it might be something that you can use and keep in your wallet. And, well, that's a great place for your business card to go. It could be just something that's just so crazy. You just can't help but carry it in your pocket and show it off to people.
Yeah.
So it's those kinds of things. They're really there's a great amount of clever thinking behind them, but they're involvement devices. And so I thought, okay, great. So what we're going to there's the new model in the book. There's a new model to contact marketing now. It's not just, we're not just sending things out and then tabulating our response and saying, okay, let's move on to the next group. Now we've added another element to this, sort of a third rail, which is a digital persistence portion of the model, or digital persistence track in the model. So when we get to the point where we can, let's say, run ads to them, retargeting ads, for example, those are great devices for just an ongoing background digital persistence campaign or module to your efforts. So you do that while you're involved in outreach, maybe even before outreach and after outreach. Once you're talking about a sale and you're in a sales cycle, keep running those ads, keep running that persistence element, because that'll push things through. Well, the pocket campaign ties into that, because if we've given something that causes someone to say, okay, I've got to go to a jump page, or let's say a landing page, I call it a jump offer and a jump page. But if there's a reason why I need to go to a page, because there's a little bit more I need. Let's say, for example, that the device, that the involvement device, is actually a credit card sized multi-tool. Uh-huh. You know, it's a wrench and it's a bottle opener, and there's a lot of other things that it does.
Right.
Well, you could you could put on that, see a video on how to use it, just directions, how to use this device. So you follow that, go to that link, and you view the video. But now we've set a tracking pixel, and so now you're now enrolled in, or whoever it is that you've handed this pocket campaign to, is now enrolled in your digital persistence campaign. So they start seeing ads for you, and they get campaign just like all the other people that you're involved with in outreach.
Right.
They get pulled in, and they're treated just like the same people. You want to make sure you're careful about who you hand these to, I suppose. You don't want to just hand them out and get a bunch of people registering, and now you're running ads to people that don't matter to you. But that's the whole thing. It's become a campaign that you pull out of your pocket, just like a business card.
Yeah.
But it generates sales, it generates a response rate, and it generates an ROI. And you can test, you can do an A-B split test. You could pull one out of one pocket, and then next time another one out of the other pocket, I suppose. But it's actually a marketing campaign launched from your pocket.
So one message I get from this is that creativity is again back in business. I mean, at some point, this digital marketing thing, it was all about analytics, although they were, you know, doing some fine tuning here and there. I understand the creativity that goes into changing a word here and changing a logo here, changing a color or a button or whatever. But you are talking of really core creative ideas.
Yeah, I suppose, but again, I go back to my example with Leonardo again. Has it ever gone? Did it ever leave?
Yeah, correct.
I mean, it's always been relevant. I can tell you that, you know, I've lived. If you could see the color of my hair, you'd know that I've lived a long career already, and I've used cartoons my whole career. And it's like, God, it's a secret weapon for one thing, but it's also it feels like I'm getting away with something.
Right. You know? Right.
That's always, as far as I'm concerned, it's always been a force and always, I mean, it's always involved in most advertising, some, not all, but it's always been a force. It's always been there.
Yeah, I totally agree. In fact, the point I was making was that we thought as if creativity is not relevant anymore, just doing A-B tests of just, you know, doing it at a more granular level, which makes it like more mechanical or so, would do the job. I'm just saying that actually what I meant was that the fact that creativity still delivers big time, and it was always delivering, comes back as a renewed message, is what I was trying to say.
Well, you know, that's it. I think that's fascinating, because sometimes, well, you know, LinkedIn is a wonderful thing, and you've got to be careful about what you say, I suppose, because, you know, people will post something. I mean, my book just came out, so people are posting, oh, I just got it, and I jump, I mean, I get notified.
Yes.
So I jump right on in and participate in the discussion.
Right.
I might be the first one there even.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll say, man, thank you. And by the way, this is the age of LinkedIn. Of course, the age of LinkedIn began a long time ago, but this is the age of LinkedIn when the you post something and the author's the first one there to comment and say, thanks for buying the book. But, you know, one of the things that I have seen, sort of, I wouldn't call it overheard, but I've seen in comments is that, people will say, oh, that's old school. They'll say some of the things that Stu is doing or talking about is old school. Mm. And I just feel like, well, you what a fool you are. Mm. Because, you know, things are cyclical. Of course, digital wasn't there before it was there.
Yeah.
But anybody, I think that's the comment of someone who's been in their career less than 5 years and has learned how to run a digital campaign, and they think that everything else is old school. And my response to that usually is, there is no old school or new school. There's just what works. And by the way, a lot of things just recycle. Just use what works and get off.
Yeah.
That's just an idiotic thing to say.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, that cannot be the reason of either doing something or not doing something.
Well, if that's driving your decisions,
Then
you need help.
So that again sort of connects to the other question I had. How are millennials sort of reacting to your ideas and the case studies that you are talking of? I know you mentioned about a very interesting story of Dom Steinman. So would you share a bit about what happened with him?
Yeah. Actually, so Dom is a millennial, and he was one of those people who showed up in my life right after How to Get a Meeting with Anyone released, and he just said, you know, I'd like to tell you a story. I bought your book. I love your book. I wanted to tell you a story because it actually changed something huge in my life. Mm. And so then he went on to tell me about he was hired as an SDR, as a sales development rep, straight out of college, by a late stage tech startup in Silicon Valley, and they had a whole room full of young guys like him, who they were saying, look, what we want you to do is make 100 phone calls a day. Mm. We'll give you a list of accounts, but we want you to make 100 phone calls a day. Mm. This is cold calling. It's just a bill. And so Dom was discovering really quickly, well, gosh, this isn't really, I mean, I'm lucky if I get one conversation a day out of this.
Right.
It's not working. And so he was having dinner with a friend one evening, and he was telling the story, just telling him how frustrated he was. And the friend said, you need to buy this book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And they talked about it a little bit. So he went and did it and read the book. And he said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm still going to do my 100 phone calls a day. But what I'm doing next is I'm going to start focusing on some of the accounts that nobody has been able to penetrate yet. And I'm going to do a profile scrape. I'm going to do deep research and find out what they're interested in, and then I'm going to craft a gift, and that'll be my campaign. So the first one he focused on, he discovered that the guy was really into cooking and technology and family. So he addressed two out of three with an apron that he bought, a barbecue apron that he had embroidered with a quote from Stanley C. Clarke, who said something to the effect that technology sufficiently advanced will appear as magic.
Right.
So put that on the apron and send it to the guy. Well, the guy immediately responded, and right after that, a six figure deal ensued.
Wow.
Well, that's pretty cool. And so now his colleagues started noticing what he was doing. And asked him, what are you doing? How are you doing this? And would you help us? Mm. And he said, well, sure. So the next thing that happens is one of his colleagues said, okay, I've got this one account, just like you've had, this one account. Nobody's been able to talk to him, from our company. Nobody's been able to break through. And so Dom and he went through showed him how to do a profile scrape, and they discovered that the fellow was really, really interested in falconry. So he went to a falconry site and actually called the owner and said, "Okay, look, we want to get a gift for someone who's really interested in falconry. We don't know falconry at all. So what makes a good gift?" The owner said, "This glove," and he pointed him, brought them to a page on his site. This glove, the gloves used in falconry, they're ornate, they're beautiful, and they do make gifts. And so he said, get this glove, he'll love it. So they said, okay, great. They ordered it and had it shipped to the prospect. Meanwhile, they did a screen grab of the photograph and sent an email to the prospect immediately, or the account immediately, and said, hey, I just ordered this for you, and I'm doing it because I'd just like to get a few minutes of your time. The guy writes back right away. Now, nobody's been able to reach him, but the guy writes back right away. And he says, hey, that's really cool. But listen, I'm just not a prospect for what you guys do, but I really appreciate the effort. Well, then, you know, a few days later, the glove shows up. And the fellow calls him back right away. Says, hey, remember I told you I was not a prospect? Well, I'm not. But I love this glove. It's awesome. I want to thank you. So I know three other CIOs who are looking looking for exactly what you guys do, and I'm going to make introductions. Well, more deals ensued. And so now, you know, and so this just kept spreading throughout the sales room. And eventually the management started noticing what was happening. They said, well, what's going on? And they said, well, Dom's been doing it. So Dom's responsible for this? Yeah. So they promoted Dom to sales manager. And that was right about the time when this company was sold to, I think it was Cisco, for $4.7 billion.
Wow.
So in the span of a year, because of contact marketing, because of his adoption of contact marketing, Dom went from a new hire straight out of college to the sales manager of a multinational $4.7 billion company. So that's, you know, there are lots of really extraordinary stories of things that have happened as a result of using contact marketing, and therefore the meetings that came about, and that are just stunning. I mean, the record response for the highest response rate I've found for a contact marketing campaign so far now is 69,500,000%.
Wow!
So that was a $28 ad, contact ad, run on Facebook to try to get the attention of the buyers, the right buyer at Walmart, and it worked. And they got a $1.5 million order, and this was a startup. So because they were suddenly being rolled out into Walmart's 6,800 stores, the value of the company went up by a factor of 10. So that's an amazing thing. So the value of the company went from $2 million, because that was twice earnings,
right,
previous year's earnings. So it went from $2 million to $20 million, and that ad also yielded a $1.5 million order and, you know, rollout in Walmart. So just from a $28 ad.
So they actually ran an ad with the name of the person in Facebook?
No, they didn't know the name of the person. The company was, or the startup's name was Aurabrush, and the product was Aurabrush. And this is a tongue cleaner that they had been selling the previous year, that they'd only been around for a year. So that the whole previous year, they were releasing ads on YouTube and selling, as a result, selling the product online. And their entire sales for that first year were $1 million, which is impressive. That's a good result for a startup. And then they thought, okay, what's next? Well, let's get this into brick and mortar as well. So let's get it into Walmart. Let's just shoot for the biggest one. And they went through the process of applying. And I know I guess we can all pretty much assume that's a pretty, I don't know if somebody's listening from Walmart, they might not agree, but it's a pretty dead end process, right? I mean, there's too many people. Let me put it this way. It's a crowded channel. So it takes a long time to get to people, and it's hard to show up, hard to stand out. And so they had done that, and it wasn't getting anywhere. So they, out of frustration, they ran an ad, and it had their Aurabrush product and a spokesperson from their YouTube videos on there. And the headline was, "Walmart employees have bad breath." And this was run. I mean, you can get very targeted with Facebook ads. So it was run just in the zip code for the Bentonville, Arkansas headquarters of Walmart. And then they also then specified parameters for education level and age, so that they were likely to hit the people that were in the Walmart headquarters.
Right.
And within 48 hours, they heard from them.
Wow. Yeah, that's fascinating. So that sort of brings me to this question I have, like, all the time, that people, I mean, there is no question that there's so much more knowledge out there than it was earlier, right? And it's so much more accessible, right? So I found out about your book on LinkedIn. I reached out to you, and I now know that this book exists. Otherwise, it might have taken a trip to the bookstore or some accidental search on Amazon before I discovered it, right? So my question that comes up all the time is, why after reading so much, people still don't use what they read?
Well, that's a good question. they do use it. I mean, I just told you the story of Dom.
Yes, of course. I'll reframe it. Why most people don't use it?
I'm actually agreeing with you too, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just that I think people get excited by shiny new objects. Mm. They move on to the next and the next and the next. Mm. Contact marketing requires an investment of brain power, at least. Mm. You can actually get away with doing it pretty inexpensively, but you've got to at least put some brain power into it. And so it might be that I don't know. There are a lot of people doing it, though. There are a lot of people using it out there.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm sure. I can see totally the value, and I think I agree with you that people somehow do not want to exert themselves to come up. I mean, if you tell them, I'll give you 5 gift ideas, try to use it, they will use it, and then they'll say it's not working because they're not really putting the time to figure out what really fits that particular prospect they're trying to reach. But they would not try to actually do what Dom did in terms of scraping the profile and figuring out what they really like, going and finding out something appropriate. I mean, it needs effort, and somehow I think people loathe to put in that level of effort, irrespective of what success will get them. And they're just in this bubble where they're comfortable doing whatever they're doing, yet knowing that it's not going to move the needle much.
You know, I would say that, you know, yeah, I think that happens in any, for example, any sort of training, and I guess a book is a form of training.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you go to a speech and you hear someone say things and you just say, oh my gosh, that's incredible. You know, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna put that into my life. And then you go back to what you, mm-hmm. you know, you go back to stasis.
Right.
And then nothing, you know, nothing changes. But I will say though that there are a lot of, you know, if that's happening, you got to change that pattern in your life, because there are also lots of people who are not allowing that to happen. You know, they are actually implementing it.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people using it. Oh my God! I mean, the stories that I keep hearing, they're just amazing. There are lots and lots and lots of stories of what people are doing to use cleverness and audacity and creativity to break through. And when they break through, if they're breaking through to the right people, it's changing the scale of their careers and their lives.
So I have one final question, and that is, I read your book, and so does my competitor. Both of us identify a prospect who is likely to be the buyer, and both of us are trying out ideas that we are both learning from your book. How does that pan out according to you?
Well, that's good for the book sales.
Of course.
First of all. Well, I mean, I guess that's a little bit like asking, I start running ads digitally, and then my competitor starts doing that. Now what? And I guess, you know, I don't know. I'm sure I'm going to get this quote wrong, but Warren Buffett once said something like this, something to this effect, that if the trick is to stand above everyone else, but not let them notice that you're standing above everyone else, to have an advantage, but not let people notice that you have that advantage. Well, we've learned about marketing, but then so is everybody else. Should we not use marketing? Yes, you should, but you better be good at it, because then you just have to be competitive then.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. That's a great note to end on, Stu Hynek. I really, really appreciate your time. It was a wonderful discussion, and I hope to come back. I'm going to circle back to you and talk about your old book one of these days.
Yeah, we should do that. Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. Should we say the names of the book or how to get it?
Yes, please. I mean, how can people reach you and the books, all of that? Please tell them.
Yeah, okay. Well, so the first book is How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, and the new one is Get the Meeting. So I guess meeting is the one word that's...
Yes, we are talking about.
Really common there. You can find me on... If you want to connect with me, you can certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, although please do more than just that. Don't pitch me, but do more than just that. But certainly... And mention that you heard me on this podcast.
That's
helpful as well.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, and I really appreciate and I hope to talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up in the next episode with Rob Hartnett, author of a fascinating new book, It's All Possible, a book on possibility thinking and mindset, where he describes his proven four-step possibility system and shows how anybody can use it to achieve their goals and aspirations.
And so I got into personal development and how do you get better and how do you improve yourself? And also because I've raced yachts and done cycling now these days, but I've raced at the international level, at the elite level. So I've always been at that, how can I benchmark the best? What do the best do? So that's always been a way of life for me. And so just studying what people did well, and studying the processes they did, and especially people who changed, who went from one sport to another sport, or who went from sport to business. They seem to, not everyone can do it, but a few can do it. And it was me studying those people and then doing it myself, because I'm a person who can't write a book based on other things. You know, I got to do it myself. I got to prove it myself. And so that's why there's a lot of me in the book, simply because I did it and wanted to prove the model. But that's where I really started to get into this process. And so as I started to map it out and refine it, I tested it. And I think one of the exciting things for me has been when I sent the early drafts of the book out, and you can see that, you can see in the first couple of pages of the testimonials, they came back from business leaders, Olympians, people who'd succeeded as entrepreneurs. So it's kind of that diverse group had said, yeah, this system, that's what we do. That's what I do, or I do more of that part. And yeah, absolutely. And so to me, it kind of resonated that I probably hit the mark with it because of this group of people who had, you know, I've never been an Olympian, but said I have two gold medalists, applaud the book was very exciting to me from different sports.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.